All right, are there any other questions regarding material from last Thursday? What we just mentioned, for those of you listening on here, oxidation occurs at the anode and reduction occurs at the cathode. Easiest way to remember it, I think, is that anode comes before cathode alphabetically, just like oxidation comes before reduction. Now, at the very end of the hour yesterday, or last Thursday, we looked at this example here, which we calculated a cell potential. We said that in order to wind up with a standard cell potential, we simply went to the table there on page 818. We summed together the oxidation and reduction potentials, wind up with the overall cell potential. We kind of ran a little short of time, and so we had one other reaction that we had looked at in class on Thursday, like this, and did not get a chance to assign the cell potential for it. So if you want to go back to your notes from Thursday, let's go ahead and calculate the cell potential for this one right here. And so what we'll do then is we'll go to our table on page 818. We look at the two reactions. Remember now that this table here is one that is given in terms of reduction potentials, so they are all written as reduction reactions. So I'm going to look at the reduction one first, and then we'll look at the oxidation. And so the reduction now, you'll need to read these equations carefully. We're looking at the iron 3 ion being reduced down to the iron 2 ion. And so we would find that in the table, right down here, where we show the iron 3 ion picking up an electron to yield the iron 2 ion. And we have a reduction potential there of 0.77 volts. We come back in here and we put in 0.77 volts. Now the temptation is because if you look at the equation in your textbook, you'll see that the equation in your textbook is one that shows coefficients of 1 across the board. And since we've taken everything in here and multiplied it by 2, the temptation then would be to take this reduction potential and multiply it by 2 as well. We don't do that because we can think of the reduction potential or the cell potential as being similar to the distance between a couple objects. And a couple objects, I know an example I gave the other day was standing between people, but the other thing you can think of is, say, between the moon and the earth. And the moon and the earth have an attraction for each other, and the attraction between each other is due to the attraction of gravity. Just like there's going to be attraction or competition for electrons between the anode and the cathode. And it's the cathode that winds up attracting those electrons and pulling them on over. And so, just like with the larger the mass, the larger the gravitational attraction, here, in terms of the larger the number of electrons, the larger amount of work that can be done, or the traction that can be done. But what doesn't change is the distance between them. And so you want to think of the reduction potentials or the cell potentials as being like the distance between. You can have large objects with distance between, small objects with the same distance between, and that doesn't change the distance. So we simply take whatever is there, regardless of the number we may have multiplied the equation by. Then we have our second reaction, which we're showing copper being oxidized to the copper 2 ion. We come back here, and we see the reduction reaction. We're showing the copper 2 ion being reduced to the copper. We, however, are doing the reverse of the reaction, so if we're listing positive 0.34 volts here for the reduction, for the oxidation, we'd list that as negative 0.34 volts. And then to find the cell potential, all we need to do is to simply sum these two together. Sum of the oxidation reduction potentials in this case would give us 0.43 volts as being that cell potential. Any questions that you have for that? Now, another use of this table on page 818 is to help tell us the strength of oxidizing agents and reducing agents. So we'll look at determining the strength of oxidizing agents and reducing agents. Now, one of the questions that we had asked the other day was something like, will copper react with zinc ions? Or we may have asked, will zinc react with the copper 2 ions? Now, I've dumped that stuff out last week, but I'm trying to remember now which one we actually observed. I believe we observed number 2 here. This is the one in which we put the strip of zinc into the solution of the copper 2 sulfate. We put in the blue solution. We saw the reaction occurring. And so, again, we found out that this one here did not occur, the first one, and that the second one did. This is what we physically observed with the reaction. Now, there's a couple ways we can go about determining this. First of all, we can go back and look at the reaction from last week, and I think we hit that right at the very end. Here's the one we observed. And we found that when the zinc reacted with the copper ions, we wound up with an overall salt potential of positive 1.10 volts. If we had taken reverse of this reaction, I'm going to just copy and paste this whole thing on over here and put it into today's notes. So if we had looked at the reverse reaction, let's say that we had looked at copper reacting with zinc ions to produce zinc metal and copper 2 ions, which this year being the reverse reaction, what do you suppose the cell potential for this reverse reaction would have been? We had simply taken this reaction right over here and reversed it. We come up with a negative sign. And so we would have wound up with a negative 1.10 volts. And so we would have found then that because of that, that this reaction is one that would not occur. And so in terms of the strength of the oxidizing and reducing agents, here's what we'd have to consider. First of all, we look at the fact that the copper 2 ion was the one that was reduced. Yes, the copper 2 ion is the one that was reduced. That means that the copper 2 ion is a stronger oxidizing agent than the zinc ions. Remember now, if we're looking at a process of reduction, that if we're looking at copper being reduced like it is, that means that the copper 2 ion acts as an oxidizing agent. And so I know it sounds like we're just kind of throwing these words out here, but again, what it means then, since we observed the copper 2 ions act as an oxidizing agent, that the copper 2 ions act as a stronger oxidizing agent. And so what you can do with this table here on page 818 is this. If we look at the position of the copper 2 ions in here and compare them to the position of the zinc ions, which appear way up here, turns out that the copper 2 ions have a larger reduction potential than does the zinc ions. As a result then, the more positive the reduction potential, the stronger the oxidizing agent. So by that token, what that means is that if we go all the way to the very end, the strongest of all the oxidizing agents here is F2. Fluorine is the strongest of the oxidizing agents, we see that oxygen here, which should make sense, is also a very strong oxidizing agent. The weakest of the oxidizing agents then would be up here as being lithium. So again, as we write all these reactions here as reduction reactions, we're basically looking at their strength as oxidizing agents. What that means then is that if we were to take all these reactions and flip them over, and if we flipped all these reactions over, these then would be considered to be oxidation half reactions. And if they're oxidation half reactions, then we'd be looking at the strengths of the reducing agents. And of course, if we flipped all those reactions around, what would happen to all the signs on here? They get switched as well. And so what would the strongest reducing agent be from all of these on here? Lithium, exactly. Lithium here, lithium metal. And this is where it's going to be important for you to label ions. I know that some of you get frustrated by these little point deductions here and there, but when it comes to electrochemistry, it's going to be very important. If we leave the sign off, you're giving a very different meaning. So lithium metal here would be the strongest of the reducing agents because it's going to have the most positive oxidation potential. And that means that the weakest of the reducing agents is going to be the fluoride ion, because its oxidation potential is going to be a negative 2.87 volts. So let's just do a real quick one here, just to see if we understand this. Which of the following? Which of the following is the weakest reducing agent? And so, yeah, I know it's a Monday morning and everything, and that means that it's tough to think and whatever else. But let's say that we compare silver metal to cadmium metal. Let's compare silver metal to cadmium metal. So the following is the weakest reducing agent. So I'll give you about a minute here to come up with an answer. All right, let's see how we did. How many would vote for the silver ion? Raise your hand. How many would vote for cadmium? And whoops, did I say ion? Bad me. Let's start again. How many would vote for silver metal? Raise your hands. How many vote for cadmium metal? Raise yours. All right, we're no better than flipping a coin here. Let's go back to this. If we're looking at a reducing agent, that means that we have to look at what types of reactions, oxidation or reduction?
Oxidation.
So that means we're going to have to look at the oxidation potentials. So if we want to look at the oxidation potentials for silver and cadmium, we see silver, the reduction potential is positive 0.80 volts, so the oxidation potential for silver would be negative 0.80 volts. And the oxidation potential for the cadmium metal would be positive 0.40 volts. And so if the cadmium then would be a positive 0.40 volts, that means that the weakest of these is going to be the silver, because it has the smallest oxidation potential. Excuse me? You don't get it, is what you're saying?
That's good, you know.
Yep.
I thought that you are, which one is the
stronger? And is that what I said? Who knows? You know, it's Monday morning. Just follow what I write, not what I say. Because usually I know I say, do what I say, not what I don't know what it is. But whatever. This is the right answer here. So, and you only have to put up with me for like three more days. Actually, two.
Because Thursday, you're not putting up with me, you're putting up with the ACS, so. All right.
Any questions on this?
All right, isn't this great? It's just Monday, we only got 3 more days after today. Let's look at a problem from the end of chapter 20.
And let's look at number 71.
Now, number 71 asks for us to calculate the standard EMF. For the following reaction from the standard free energies of formation. So from these values for the following reaction. Now if you're wondering what the standard EMF is, the standard EMF is this thing right here. It stands for the cell potential.
The standard cell potential. And abbreviation EMF stands for the electromotive force. EMF stands for the electromotive force.
Which is the same as the cell potential. So our reaction that we're looking at is going to be a reaction between magnesium metal and 2 moles of silver ions, reacting to yield magnesium ions and 2 moles of silver.
And now, what we should be doing is we should be looking up the standard free energies of formation from Appendix C.
They call it the standard free energies of formation are given in units of kilojoules per mole. Now, before we even look at the back of the text, we should already be able to fill in a couple values in this table. Which ones should we be able to fill in? Silver, which would have a value of? 0. And which other one? Magnesium, which would have a value also of 0.
Remember now that the reference form of each element is going to have a standard free energy of formation equal to 0. So we'd simply look up the values then for the silver ion and the magnesium ion. This comes from Appendix C.
And we're looking at the aqueous phase. So we have negative 454.8. For the magnesium ions and for the silver ions, looks like we'd have 77.12. And of course, we have 2 moles of the silver. And so now if we calculate the standard free energy of formation, we'd simply take the sum of the products minus the sum of the reactants. Of course, you don't have to put in the plus and minus 0. I just show it to remind us where they came from. So we'll take negative 454.8 and subtract from it 2 times 77.12. And I come up with a negative 609 0.0. And the label on this is going to be? Kilojoules. Not kilojoules per mole, because moles times kilojoules per mole, we have moles cancel out on there. Now, from here, if we want to calculate the standard EMF, we remember that we brought up a formula the other day that looked like this. We said that the max amount of work, or the standard free energy change, is equal to N times F times the standard cell potential. If we now want to solve for that cell potential, we're going to divide each side by a negative NF. And we're left with E cell. It's being equal to the standard free energy change over a negative N, and again over the Faraday constant. Now, the Faraday constant, so we got negative 609.0 kilojoules. The Faraday constant is given in coulombs per mole, and I don't have the number off the top of my head. So you'll find this, I believe, in the front cover, no, the back cover of your text, or you'll also find it on the back side of your periodic table. And the Faraday constant has a value of 9.65 times 10 to the 4th coulombs per mole. And then negative N would be the number of moles of electrons. Now this one we ought to be able to do in our heads to figure out how many moles of electrons are transferred. Because again, N stands for that number of moles. In order to go from magnesium to go from an oxidation number of 0 to plus 2, we need to give up a total of how many electrons? 2. And just to confirm then, if we go from a plus 1 oxidation number to 0, for the silver, that's going to require the gain of 1 electron. But since we have 2 moles, 2 times that 1 is going to give us 2 moles as well. So the total number of moles of transfer is going to be 2 moles. And so we put in down here 2 moles. And then what's going to happen is moles are going to cancel. Now in order for this calculation to work, we're going to have to be in SI units. And the reason for that is that we'll recall that 1 joule is equal to a coulomb volt in terms of units. And so if we look at kilojoules, that's not a coulomb volt. That's going to be kilo coulomb volt. And so what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to convert kilojoules to joules. And to do that, we're going to have to multiply by a factor of 10 to the third power, or factor 1,000. And so that's going to give us joules. And so, to help us out with units, I'm going to replace joules with the units of a coulomb volt. And what will happen then is that coulombs are going to cancel out, and that's going to leave us units of volts. We have a negative divided by a negative, which of course is going to give us a positive. And so we can go ahead and take 609E3, divide that by 2, and divide it again by 9.65E4. And we wind up with a result of 3.15 volts. Now, in terms of an answer that makes sense, here's a couple of things that you can do to have it make sense. First of all, remember that the sine and delta G and the standard cell potential must always be opposite of each other. And if we have a negative sign here for the delta G, that indicates for us that this reaction is one that is spontaneous. And if we have a positive cell potential, that's also one that indicates to us that the reaction is spontaneous. Then the other thing is, we can do
for it to make sense, is that remember that our range in volts, typically for a cell, probably the largest range is about plus or minus 5 volts. And so if you wind up with an answer 5,000 volts, you've done something very wrong. So when you get an answer, it should be in that range. And if you add a very little one, like a 0.000315 volts, that would be one that shouldn't make a whole lot of sense either. So look at an answer like this to see if it's one that makes sense. Any questions that you have on that one? Okay, let's go on. Now last week, we had a couple formulas that we looked at. And in chapter 19, we had a formula that looked something like this. We said that the standard free energy change was equal to negative RT times the natural log of K. And then in chapter 20, we had one, which we said that the standard free energy change was equal to negative N times F times the standard cell potential. Well, of course now, if these two are equal to each other, or we've calculated delta G, what we can do with each of these then is to set each of these two equal to each other. And so we'd have negative RT times the natural log of K is equal to negative NF times the standard cell potential. Let's rearrange this equation now and solve for the standard cell potential. To do this, we're going to have to divide each side by negative NF. Of course, that's gone. These become positives. And so what we're left with is RT times the natural log K all over NF as the result. Now, if we were to assume that this was conducted at a temperature of 25 degrees Celsius, we can refine this equation even more. And the reason why we can refine it even more is because if we're assuming standard conditions, that means that the temperature is always a constant at 25 degrees Celsius or 298 K. R here is constant as well, and the other constant here is F. So each one of these then at 25 degrees Celsius is going to wind up being a constant value. So we could go ahead and substitute those values in. We'd have 8.315 joules per mole dot K. We've got the temperature, which would be 298 K. That's the natural log of the equilibrium constant, divided by N, which of course is going to be in units of moles, and then divided by F, which is 9.65 times 10 to the fourth coulombs per mole. And so these will cancel, Kelvins cancel. We wind up with a unit of joules per coulomb, and a joule per coulomb is the same as a unit of a volt. Going back again to the fact that one joule is equal to a coulomb volt. Well, we can go ahead and resolve this. We will take the 8.315, multiply that by 298, and divide that by the Faraday constant of 9.65 E4. And we pretty much wind up with a value of 0.0257 over N times the natural log of K is equal to the standard cell potential. where N here stands for number of moles. Number of moles of what stuff?
Moles of electrons. So look at the number of moles of electrons transferred in the reaction. Now, your textbook, it turns out, and don't ask me why your textbook does this, but your textbook rewrites this as 0.0592 over N times the log of K. These are the same relationships. This is the one shown in your text. And if you're wondering where in the heck that came from, it's one of those rules of logarithms that you may or may not have even looked at before, and that is that the natural log of x is equal to 2.303 times the log of x. So it comes from the basic rule as to how logarithms work. This here is a base 10 logarithm. This one here is a natural log. And so if you take 2.303 and multiply it by 0.0257, you'll wind up with this value here. And so it doesn't matter which of the two you use with your calculations, you should in fact wind up with the same result. And personally, I think it's easy to deal with base 10 logarithms anyway, so maybe that's the reason why the text went with this latter. Well, with this one, let's go ahead and use the this equation on a problem. Let's look at number 75. And we've done this one already here today. Well, we've done the cell potential part. So on this one here, it asks us to find the equilibrium constant K at 25 degrees Celsius for the following reaction. And it's one in which we have iron 3 ions reacting with copper metal to yield iron 2 ions and some copper 2 ions. And so if we were to do this, then we'd go back and we would identify the oxidation half reaction and the reduction half reaction. Our oxidation half reaction looks like it's going to be copper metal going on to yield copper 2 ions plus a couple of electrons. And it looks like our reduction is going to be iron 3 ions going on to yield iron 2 ions. And that this is going to require the gain of one electron. So again, we're showing copper going on to yield copper 2 ions. We're showing the iron 3 ions going on to yield iron 2. This process requires the gain of one electron. This one here requires the loss of two electrons. And so then, of course, to make the two equations equal, we would have had to take the reduction half reaction and multiply it by a factor of 2. Distributing across, we'd have 2, 2, and 2. And these here then sum up to yield this overall reaction up above. So we go back and we look up the oxidation potential and the reduction potential, as we had done earlier today. And we already have these values. We have them as a positive 0.77 volts for the iron being reduced and a negative 0.34 volts for the copper being oxidized. and a positive 0.43 volts overall.
So then our next step on this one is that we'd like to look at the...
Oh, and then the balance, I guess that does not quite balance this one. So if we want to balance it, what would we write in the equation? Two of the iron three ions and two of the iron two ions. So then our formula here says that we have the standard cell potential is equal to 0.0592 over n times the log of k. And we'd like to solve this then for the value of k. So to solve this for k, we're going to multiply each side by n and divide each side by 0.0592. And so that cancels this out over here. We should then be able to substitute values in. N in this case is equal to how much? 2 moles times the cell potential, which is 0.43 volts. We divide that by the 0.0592, which we should have mentioned this, but we didn't. Oh, we did. Maybe I wrote it in and didn't mention it. The units on here are volts for each one of these. And so this here is volts. Volts over volts will cancel out. And that's going to be equal to the log of k. We'll take 2 times the 0.43, divide that by 0.0592, and we wind up with a result of 14.53 as the result. Of course, really only 2 significant figures. It's being equal to the log of k. Well, now if we want to get k by itself, what do we need to do to each side? We're going to take an anti-log of each side. It's the same as raising as a power of 10. So we take 10 and raise it to that result. And we wind up with a result then of 3.4 times 10 to the 14th. Now, actually, in terms of significant figures, remember now that the way significant figures work when we deal with powers of 10, the numbers here in front of the decimal indicate this power of 10. The digits after the decimal are the ones that would be significant figures. So this one is really one that has a total of 0 significant figures. So this one here would probably be best rounded off to 10 to the 14th as an answer. If you want to leave some number in there, just to give some idea of the magnitude, it might round it off to 3 times 10 to the 14th. But again, probably simply rounding it off to the power of 10 on this one would be adequate. Now, when you get this result, you should ask yourself if this is one that makes sense. That, too, is easy to answer. To answer this one, we look at the standard cell potential here, which is a positive value. If we have a positive value on here, that means that this reaction is one that is spontaneous. And if a reaction is spontaneous, that means we should have an equilibrium constant that is very big or very small. Very large. Remember, the way we calculate the equilibrium constant is products over reactants. And so it's products over reactants. One that has a large amount of products will have a large numerator. And so we'd have a value then of 10 to the positive 14, indicating that this is product favored. Product favored and spontaneous mean the same thing. Any questions that you have on that? Then the last major equation I think that we'll be using here in chapter 20, we may look at one more, but the last major one that we're going to look at is yet another derivation from chapter 19. From chapter 19, we had an equation that looked something like this. We wanted to calculate the free energy change under non-standard conditions. We said that the free energy change under non-standard conditions was equal to the standard free energy change plus RT times the natural log of Q. We've seen already where the free energy change is equal to N times F times E cell. And of course, if we're dealing with standard conditions, there's N times F times the standard cell potential. Each one of these had a negative sign in them. Well, what we can do here then is we can substitute in for these values. Substituting in, we wind up with a negative N times F times E cell is equal to negative N times F times the standard cell potential plus RT times the natural log of Q. Now what we're trying to work towards here is we want to find the cell potential for non-standard conditions. If we want to find the E cell for non-standard conditions, that means then that we want to solve this one for the cell potential, E cell. So to get this guy by itself, what we're going to do is we're going to divide each side by a negative NF. So we'll divide this by negative NF. We'll divide this by negative NF. And we'll divide this by negative NF. Negative NF here cancels out. Cancels out as well here. And what we're left with is that the cell potential is equal to the standard cell potential minus RT over NF times the natural log of Q. Well, now, just like before, we know that R is a constant, F is a constant, and if we're talking about non-standard conditions but still keep it the standard temperature of 25 degrees Celsius, then the temperature is a constant as well. So all of these three here then are constant values. Well, we've already calculated what R times T over F is equal to, and that value is equal to 0.0257. And so we then say that the cell potential is equal to the standard cell potential minus 0.0257 over N times the natural log of Q. And for whatever reason, you'll often see this one rewritten in terms of a base 10 logarithm. And so rewriting it in terms of a base 10 logarithm, we multiply the 0.0257 by 2.303, and we wind up with this. So your textbook probably gives the second one here. First one here is the form derived from the natural log expression that we used here last week. Either one of these will work. Again, the second one, though, is probably the one given in your text. Now, it turns out that this last one has a name. It's called the Nernst equation. And the Nernst equation helps us calculate the cell potentials then with non-standard conditions, assuming we're at 25 degrees Celsius. So let's go ahead then and work with this. Let's find E cell for this particular cell. So I'm going to generate an aluminum and copper cell. Now, if we had started with a cell that was under standard conditions, I'll kind of let you get caught up here. Let's say I'm going to erase these for just a moment. I'm going to put them back. Let's say if we went back to one which we're looking at standard conditions. If we're looking at standard conditions, the concentration of aluminum ions would have been 1 molar, the concentration of the copper two ions would have been 1 molar. If we let this battery run for a while, what's going to happen to the concentration of aluminum ions? What's going to happen to the concentration of aluminum ions if we let this battery run? Well, what does the half reaction look like on the anode side? We're going to be starting with which stuff? Aluminum metal or aluminum ions? Aluminum metal. Aluminum metal is going to go on to yield aluminum ions. So what is going to happen to the concentration of aluminum ions as this battery operates? Well, what side of the equation is this on? Reactant or product? Product. So it's on the product side. What's going to happen to its concentration as this cell operates? It's going to go up. So if we start at 1 molar, it would go on then to yield, and I'm just making up a number here, but let's say if it operates for a while, it goes up to 2 molar. And then the copper two ions are going to go on to yield copper metal. And so what's going to happen to the concentration of copper two ions as this battery operates? It's going to decrease. It's going to decrease because as a reactant, it's going to go down. And so if you're wondering where these came from, we didn't just pull them out of the hat. We looked at the anode side. This tells us that aluminum goes on to yield aluminum ions. And on the cathode side, it shows that copper two ions goes on to yield copper metal. And so its concentration is going to go down. And so let's say that it goes down to 0.010 molar.
So if we started with one that was under standard conditions, we wind up with this. Then we should be able to ask ourselves, what do you think is going to happen to the cell potential after the battery operates? Should it go up or should it go down? Well, what happens to any battery after it runs for a while? It should go down. So we should have a basis then for answering this question at the end if it's one that makes sense. We should expect to find that its cell potential does in fact go down. So let's go ahead and finish this thing off.
We've got plus 3 electrons here. We've got plus 2 electrons over on this side. The first one here is an oxidation half reaction. Our second one here is a reduction half reaction. And so if we look up the oxidation potential and the reduction potentials,
we get those off of the table on page 818. Which of these two reactions is reversed from the table? First one there. So first one, and you remember to reverse the sign. So
we'd wind up with a positive 1.66 volts for this one. And then we show two electrons being picked up by the copper two ions. And that appears we have a positive 0.34 volts for
the second one.
Well, then if we want to determine the overall cell potential, what do we do with these two values?
Add them together.
So we're going to wind up with a 2.00 volts. We should also add together the reactions. Adding together the reactions, we're going to have to take the second equation, multiply by a factor of 3. The first reaction, multiply by a factor of 2. Well, if we distribute those across the values in parentheses, we're going to wind up with 2, 2, and 6. And then for the second one, we wind up with values of 6, 3, and 3. And then we wind up with aluminum metal reacting with 3 moles of the copper 2 ions to yield 3 moles of copper metal plus 2 moles of aluminum ions. Yep. There we go. Thank you. So now we know that the standard cell potential is 2.00 volts. We, however, did not want to know the standard cell potential. What we were looking for was the non-standard cell potential. And so we then used the Nernst equation, which looks like this. Now let's remember what Q stands for. Q stands for the reaction quotient. And so let's write a reaction quotient expression for this reaction. Reaction quotient expression. Where's my... Well, here we go. So Q is calculated just like K. We take products over reactants. Now, which substances are left out of an equilibrium constant expression? Solids, as well as liquids, which we don't need to worry about here. So we're just going to look at aqueous. So we take products over reactants. Q in this case is going to equal concentration of aluminum ions raised to a power of 2 all over the concentration of the copper 2 ions raised to a power of 3. The powers come from, in the equilibrium constant expression, they come from the coefficients. So a coefficient of 2 here and a coefficient of 3, which is equal to the values on the exponents. So we substitute those on in. We have aluminum ions squared over copper 2 ions cubed. We'll then plug in our values. We have 2.00 volts minus 0.0592, and that's actually volts, over N. N in this case is equal to how much? 6, there we go. Times the logarithm of aluminum ions in this case should be equal to 2 molar. So we're going to have 2 molar raised to the second power. And we're going to divide that by the copper 2 ion concentration, which was 0.01 molar raised to the third power. So I'm going to quickly calculate an answer for Q here. Take 2 squared divided by 0.01 cubed. Looks like we got about 4 million there. I'm counting my zeros right. So it's going to equal 2.00 volts minus 0.0592 volts over 6 times the log of 4 million. Now I know you could put this all on your calculator and just solve it from here, but I'm going to take the logarithm of this quickly. Log of that value is equal to 6.602 over 6. And so we'll take and divide that by 6 and multiply it by 0.0592. And we're going to get 0.0651 volts. That will be subtracted from the 2.00 volts. Upon doing our subtraction here, looks like we cannot justify going beyond the hundredths place. But then round this off to 1.93 volts as the result. And so what we find here is that the cell potential does change a little bit, but not a whole lot. Looks like we started at the 2 volts and we wound up with the 1.93 volts. And typically the way batteries work is something like this. If we were to monitor voltage versus time on a battery, a typical voltage is that that voltage stays relatively level and then all of a sudden it drops off exponentially. And so that's why batteries typically work very well. Like on my calculator here, I can keep going, 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 just all of a sudden, boom, it's dead. And so the batteries here work pretty much the same way. You can usually tell when they're starting to die, but you'll get a long life out of a battery. And then at the very end, then that cell potential drops off quite dramatically. We saw here, even by having a very disparate concentration between the reactants and products in terms of this concentration, we still wound up with a cell potential very close to what we'd found for that under standard conditions. Okay, any questions with this? Questions? All right, then I think what we'll do here is we're going to head to break. When we come back, we're going to look at some applications of electrochemistry. Applications of electrochemistry. And we had 4 presentations. I think one of those is not going to be going. So who is up here today? There's Phoebe, Heather, and Esther. Now, I was very surprised that they were taken the way that they were last class period. And there was a couple people that still said they wanted to do a presentation.
to get that chance for extra credit. I did not want to deny that capability. So if anybody else is interested, I have these topics available for a presentation on applied nuclear chemistry that you can give tomorrow if you wish. So, 1, 2, 3. And Eddie, you were going on the 4th. Which one had you picked? Okay, so I heard Katie, and then I saw, oh, Mike, you were first last week, weren't you? So, Michael, which one? Okay, I saw Katie, 3, and who else was Justine? Positron emission tomography. Anybody else feel compelled for anything? I'll find another one if anybody else is so compelled. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back then at about 9:13 here. Those that are giving a presentation, let's come up here and we'll make sure that your flash drive or whatever works on the computer.